All right. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning me in today. And, you know, I've been researching something just out of curiosity because I know there are various definitions out there of many things, including dictatorship. And I wanted to see, you know, if I could find what I consider a classic definition of dictatorship. And I found one in something called Free Dictionary by Farlex, F-A-R-L-E-X. That's on the Internet. And I'm going to read it to you. And then we're going to talk about it because it really is scary. The definition begins by saying dictatorship is a form of government in which one person or an oligarchy possesses absolute power without effective constitutional checks. It says, with constitutional democracy, it is one of the two chief forms of government in use today. Modern dictators usually use force or fraud to gain power and then keep it through intimidation, terror, suppression of civil liberties, and control of the mass media. Does that sound familiar? Let's look at that again. Modern dictators usually use force or fraud. Fraud, i.e. Benghazi scandal, i.e. Operation Fast and Furious, the Internal Revenue Service scandal, the Solyndra scandal, you name it, one scandal after another, one fraud by this president of the United States after another, one lie by this president after another. The American people are constantly being lied to, not only by the president, but by the mass media, which for the most part he now controls, exactly what a dictator needs to do to be effective. They also say that in order to gain power and then keep it, through the dictator goes through intimidation, uses intimidation, terror, and suppression of civil liberties. Intimidation. Take the IRS scandal. What were they trying to do there? They were trying to block conservative political groups from getting the tax-exempt status they needed to effectively participate in the elections in 2010 and 2012. And they were successful. Many of these groups did not get the tax-exempt status in time to raise money so that they could run ads on the issues or they could do voter guides on the issues. They just couldn't do it. The intimidation came through the fact that in order to try to get this status, the IRS was asking illegal questions of the officers and members of these organizations. We're talking about questions as far-fetched as if you are a Christian organization, do you hold prayer meetings? If you do, what type of things do you pray for? I'm serious. This is one of the questions that was asked to an organization in Iowa, which was trying to get the tax-exempt status. These groups were asked to turn over the names of their donors, to turn over the names of their members, to turn over the names of their officers, and to turn over the names of their volunteers. Not only the names, but the addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, and to provide the political affiliation, and to provide information about whether any of these people had ever been candidates for public office or were retired from public office. Questions designed for the sole purpose of trying to intimidate people, to keep them from volunteering to work in organizations like this, to keep them from serving on the board of directors or being officers, to keep them from donating money, to keep these organizations from being effective. That is a form of intimidation that was used in the 2010 and 2012 elections. It's still being used today. It has not gone away. There are still groups out there, conservative groups and Christian groups, that still cannot get their tax-exempt status from the IRS and are still receiving these questions. And now we have the Internal Revenue Service moving to do even more damage. For 60 days prior to a primary election and 30 days prior to a national election, the IRS has proposed that groups And this is aimed exactly at 501c4 organizations, conservative organizations, Christian organizations. And although they say 501c3s are not going to be included, we have been able to tell that by the definition that they're using, we will be included. The United States Justice Foundation, USJF.net, is a 501c3. They are going to prohibit us and any other organization like us, or any organization like Tea Parties or 912 groups, any of these organizations, from endorsing candidates, which most of us don't do anyway because it's in our charter that we don't do it. U.S. Justice Foundation certainly doesn't endorse candidates. But we do deal with issues. And you have groups out there that deal with the abortion issue, the right-to-life groups. You have people out there that deal with the Second Amendment issues, protecting the right to keep and bear arms, the people that deal with free speech. And they will do things like put out a checklist of the candidates running in particular races as to what they have voted for and what they voted against when it relates to the Second Amendment, whether or not they're for gun control, they voted for gun control, or whether they haven't, and what their positions are, their campaign positions on issues like that. These are called voter guides, and they're effectively used around the country by everybody on the political spectrum. The conservatives really are the ones that got started on this. There are also voter registration drives. Advertising is bought by conservative groups, not necessarily to support a particular candidate, but to support candidates that are on the right side of an issue as far as we're concerned with. The right side of the issue being for the Second Amendment, against abortions, for freedom of speech, for economic liberty, you name it, there's a whole number of things that we could talk about there. And conservatives try to talk about it. And they try to run advertisements for candidates for local office, for statewide office, and for federal office. All of this will be prohibited under these new IRS regulations. We won't even be able to talk about the issues. Now, how, for example, will it affect somebody like me and the United States Justice Foundation? We won't be able to talk about issues for 60 days before a primary election or 30 days before a general election. I won't even be able to do this radio show unless I talk about nothing but gardening. I will not be able to discuss the Constitution with you. I will not be able to talk about the issues facing us in the upcoming elections. I will not be able to talk about violations of the Constitution. All that would be considered political speech under the IRS regulations, and it would be prohibited from us doing it. If I do it, the USJF could have its tax-exempt status revoked by the Internal Revenue Service. That, ladies and gentlemen, is intimidation. And that is what the IRS is trying to do. That's what the Obama administration is trying to do. That is the actions of a dictatorship. The comment period for opposing these IRS regulations has passed now. It was February 27th. We put in our opposition to it, and we encouraged others to do it, and hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps millions around this country, spoke out against it. But I don't think it's going to make any difference. Obama wants it done. Harry Reid wants it done. Democratic members of the United States Senate who are facing tough reelection campaigns, they want to shut down free speech. They want to stop the opposition from talking about them and what their voting records are. This is an ongoing effort by the federal government to shut us down. This is the intimidation that they talk about here in this definition. You take it a step further. We talk about controlling the mass media. Already the Obama administration controls the media to a great extent. NBC, for example, is all, for all intents and purposes, a propaganda organization for Obama. They were at one time, as far as I know, still are, NBC news staff would contact the White House for a conference call every morning to find out from the White House what they were allowed to talk about that day, what news they were allowed to report, what news Obama wanted them to report, and what how they would spin the news they did report. This is not a joke. This was being done. You have MSNBC, which constantly, they're not even a news organization. They don't even claim to be a news organization anymore. They are strictly a propaganda organ designed to support everything that Obama does, to support a dictatorship in this country, to support the destruction of our economy in this country, to suppress individual liberties, and to back up Obama in anything he does. CBS, CNN, ABC are not much better. They're better at all. I don't know if you noticed, but in the last couple of days, a very prominent investigative reporter for CBS has resigned because of the fact that she was being intimidated by her own network not to engage in any activity trying to investigate the Obama administration. She's the one that broke the story of the Benghazi cover-up. She's the one that pushed to show how this Benghazi scandal was being covered up by the White House and how the four Americans that were killed there could have been, at least two of them could have been rescued, and the whole thing could have been prevented if Hillary Clinton did not drop the ball. She finally had to resign from CBS because they weren't running her stories. They weren't letting her investigate anything. They weren't letting her do her job. So we're looking at control of the mass media. The only thing they don't control yet is radio shows like this one and the Internet. But guess what? They're moving on both of those fronts. The FCC, despite the fact that the Supreme Court has twice said they don't have jurisdiction over the Internet, is moving to control the Internet. The FCC is moving to control broadcasting. And we'll talk more about that after our first break.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Before the break, I was talking about the FCC and new regulations they're trying to put on the Internet. And not just on the Internet. A couple of weeks ago, the story broke, and I was one of the first people to talk about it, that the FCC was going to put monitors in newsrooms around the country of the major television networks, radio networks, even newspapers. Now, I understand the FCC is the Federal Communications Commission. It has no jurisdiction over newspapers at all. But since when has that stopped the Obama administration? So they were going to put these monitors in there. And I'm not talking about TV monitors. I'm talking about live individuals who are going to be monitoring the news networks to determine if they were displaying the proper content to the American people. In other words, are you telling the American people what we want you to tell them? Well, Fox News would have been in bad trouble right off the bat. But they were going to do this to everybody. And you didn't hear hardly an outcry from any of the major news networks, like NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC. None of them were complaining about this idea. Fox News complained, and a number of independent radio and TV stations complained, because the idea was clearly intimidation. Put some bureaucrat in there and have them question your employees and question the news people about, well, you're going to run a story tonight critical of Obama or critical specifically of Obamacare. That's not fair. You shouldn't run that story. If you do run a story critical, you have to run another story that is praising Obamacare. That has nothing to do with news. That has to do with propaganda. And that's exactly where we stand right now with the FCC. Now, when the outcry broke out, because they were going to start this next month in April in South Carolina, they were going to set up a test case. They backed off ever so slightly and said, well, we're going to postpone this. They didn't say they were going to cancel the program. They didn't say they were not going to do this. They didn't acknowledge that this would violate the First Amendment to the Constitution when it comes to freedom of the press. Nothing. They just said, we're not going to do this at this time. So that's what intimidation is all about. The other part, another part of this definition says suppression of civil liberties. Well, isn't that what we're talking about? Suppression of free speech, suppression of freedom of the press, suppression of freedom of religion. I mean, you know, the attacks on Christians in this country and attacks on anybody essentially who's not a Muslim are growing every day. I mean, we have the federal government going along with prohibiting prayer in public schools. We have the federal government trying to remove all mention of God from our public places. Take the Ten Commandments out of courthouses. Interestingly enough, if you go into the United States Supreme Court, you will see the Ten Commandments prominently displayed inside the courtroom. But you can't display it at a courthouse in Alabama. That violates the Constitution. Rule against separation of church and state. Right, you heard that. The constitutional rule involving separation of church and state. Guess what? There is no such language in the Constitution. The phrase separation of church and state is not in the First Amendment. It is not in the Constitution. That phrase came from a letter written by a president of the United States many, many years ago, Thomas Jefferson. The letter came about because, as president, he was asked by a church group, a denomination, to mediate an internal dispute among some of its members. They wanted the president to step in and decide which side was right or help them come to an agreement. Thomas Jefferson wrote them back and said that that was not proper, that the federal government should not be involved in monitoring or controlling any religious group, that that would violate the principle of separation of church and state. That was his principle. In the Constitution, we have the Establishment Clause. It simply says the federal government shall not establish a religion, a state religion, or prohibit the free exercise of any religion by anyone. It doesn't say anything about not acknowledging God. It doesn't say anything about not having in God we trust on our coinage. It doesn't say give it any powers in any way to interfere with the states or the local governments or the local school boards and how they want to view religion in their communities, in their states. The Constitution says nothing about that. Yet that phrase has been taken and used by the courts in this country to stifle freedom of religion. It's just one more step towards ultimate dictatorship. The Constitution, when it comes to the Second Amendment, well, you have an amendment there that says that the federal government should not interfere with the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Period. That's what it says. The right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. The Supreme Court has ruled that twice and cannot be interfered with. In this case, I agree with Mark Levin when he says that they can't even have an up-and-down vote on anything relating to the Second Amendment, anything relating to gun control in Congress, because the amendment process to the Constitution is set in stone. You either have to have two-thirds of both houses of Congress vote for an amendment and then three-fourths of the state legislatures ratify it, or you have to have, three-fourths of the state legislatures call for a constitutional convention, which, by the way, there's a move among some conservatives to have that done, and I'm opposed to it. And I'll tell you why I'm opposed to it, because we don't know what would happen. The Constitution says that the states can call for a constitutional convention. It doesn't say how that will take place. It doesn't say how the states will vote, how many votes each state will have. It doesn't set forth any parameters for limiting it to a specific reason for calling a constitutional convention. So I've been debating this several times recently, but we're looking at something I think would be highly dangerous. But in any case, there is a process or several processes available to amend the Constitution. Now, my personal view is, and I've said this in speeches to the groups where there were judges and other attorneys sitting there, and most of them look at me like, you got to be kidding, you don't really believe this. Well, I do believe it. I believe that if you look at the preamble to the Bill of Rights, the preamble of the Bill of Rights basically says, I'm not talking about the preamble to the Constitution. Most of us had to learn that in school, memorize it. But this is something that really doesn't even appear in most articles or most places where the Constitution is published. The preamble of the Bill of Rights basically is a warning to the federal government by the founders of our constitutional form of government that these rights enumerated in the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, these rights have not been given to us by the federal government, and therefore the federal government cannot take them away from us. These rights have been given to us by our Creator. These rights are inherent rights that belong to all people, and they cannot be taken away from us. Now, if that's what that preamble means, and I think it is, that means that those 10 amendments cannot be amended out of the Constitution, cannot be changed. The amendment process was designed to amend the body of the Constitution, and it has been used to amend things like prohibition and then strike down prohibition. None of that is included in the Bill of Rights. None of that is encompassed by the preamble of the Bill of Rights. So my view is now and continues to be that the federal government, the Congress of the United States, has no authority to vote on whether or not to require Americans to register their firearms. It has no authority to vote on whether or not we can carry concealed weapons. It has no authority to vote on regulating our purchase of ammunition or the size of the clips or magazines we purchase for weapons. It has no authority to maintain the NICS list, the National Instant Criminal Background Checklist, particularly since they are abusing that authority right now by putting thousands and thousands of veterans on there who don't belong on there because they've never been adjudicated to be mentally ill, they've never been convicted of a felony or even charged with a felony, or even a misdemeanor for that matter. Yet they're being put on the next list. And this is something being done repeatedly by the federal government, particularly by the VA. And if you're a veteran out there and you're being affected by this, contact us at usjf.net, and we will represent you at no charge. We have to stop this. We're fighting it. We filed two lawsuits against the VA, or one lawsuit against the VA already, which we have won. And that was to force them to turn over information and documents to us under the Freedom of Information Act request, specifically relating to what they're doing and how they're doing it. They refused to turn over those documents within the 20-day time period, so we filed suit against them. And basically, we had a judge say, you have to turn over the documents. And we have gotten some very, very damaging documents from them, things that are going to be able, we'll be able to use them in court very effectively, I believe. So now we're looking to file a second suit. But we're not going to be able to do that without your help. We need to raise several hundred thousand dollars minimum to file this lawsuit, because we're not going to charge these veterans or their families anything. So if you're interested in this issue, if you're interested in the Second Amendment, please go to usjf.net and look at the donate button up on the top of the homepage, and you can find out how to donate to the cause at that point to help us in our fight, not only for the Second Amendment, but all of the fight we're involved in. We're involved in First Amendment issues, Second Amendment issues, Tenth Amendment issues. We're involved in trying to preserve the balance of power, trying to keep Obama from misusing executive orders and from destroying our Constitution that way. So there's a number of things we're doing. But it all goes back to this definition. Use force or fraud to gain power and then keep it through intimidation, terror, suppression of civil liberties, and control of the mass media. All of which is happening in this country. We'll talk about the terror aspect of that after this break.
Who is or what is USJF? It is a nonprofit legal organization founded to protect our rights through the U.S. Constitution. Active in educating the public, USJF has also contributed directly and indirectly to legal defense efforts in many celebrated cases involving fundamental conservative principles. Cases of note include the Mount Soledad Cross case, the Arizona immigration law case, the Obama eligibility cases, the NDAA illegal detention issue, and many more. Help this nonprofit as they help you. Visit www.usjf.net today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com. The pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Let's go back to the terror aspect of this, and I'll read the definition of that part of it again. Modern dictators usually use force or fraud to gain power and then keep it through intimidation, terror, suppression of civil liberties, and control of the mass media. Well, some of you are probably sitting there thinking, well, there's no terror involved in the Obama administration. There's just intimidation. Well, Look at what's being done, though. Look at the possible terrorist activities that the Obama administration is directly involved in. Having the NSA monitor our phone calls, collect data on us, violate our right to privacy. Using drones to kill American citizens abroad without any trial, without any arrest, without any charges being filed. Now, I'm not saying that these people weren't terrorists. They needed to be dealt with. But the idea that Obama thinks he can personally order an American citizen killed on his own whim, that is a very, very dangerous precedent in this country. Now we have the National Defense Authorization Act that was changed at the push by the White House. It was passed by a Congress that didn't bother reading it. And by the way, for those of you not familiar with the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, it is something passed by Congress routinely every year to authorize expenditures for national defense and to authorize the payment of veterans benefits, to authorize the operation of the VA, and to procure equipment for our military, and a number of different things. Obama had added into that a provision that is still there that allows him, and on his call alone, to declare someone in this country a potential terrorist. Not a terrorist, a potential terrorist. And to have that person arrested by the United States military, which is a violation of the Constitution and federal law, something called posse comitatus, that does not allow the military to take such type of actions in our country. Under this authorization, Obama can do that. People arrested can be held indefinitely, without trial, without charges even being filed against them, all on the whim of the President of the United States. That's terror. That's intimidation to the max. That makes everyone in this country vulnerable to arrest. Think about it this way. When Janet Napolitano took over the Department of Homeland Security, after Obama was elected, he appointed her to take it over. Well, the first thing she did was issue to all law enforcement agencies in this country, not just federal agencies, all local and state agencies also, a list of potential terrorists, potential domestic terrorists. Her definition and Obama's definition of potential domestic terrorist included at the top of the list military veterans. Veterans of the United States military, particularly those returning from Afghanistan or Iraq. Also on that list were supporters of the Second Amendment to the Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms. Also on that list were supporters of the Right to Life movement. In other words, people that opposed abortion were potential domestic terrorists. Also on that list were the innocuous things like if you had a Ron Paul bumper sticker on your car, you're a potential domestic terrorist. Now, all that sounds kind of laughable, but it was real. Now, you take that list of potential domestic terrorists, which was officially put out by the Obama administration, has been on the website of Department of Homeland Security. Then it was removed and then put back on and removed again. I haven't checked it today. I don't know if it's still up there or not, but I do know it was sent out. I have seen it when it was on the website. Take that list and look at the provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act. First, you have the list of potential domestic terrorists. Then you have powers given to the president to deal with the people on that list. And the power for him to deal with us, and I say us because I make all those lists, except for the Ron Paul bumper sticker, I'm pretty much covered. He now has the power to deal with us by having us arrested by the U.S. military and permanently detained without ever having to go to trial, without the writ of habeas corpus. During the Civil War of this country, President Abraham Lincoln took the extraordinary measure of suspending the writ of habeas corpus, which requires if you file a writ of habeas corpus, if you're being held in prison, if you're being detained by the authorities, and you can file a writ of habeas corpus to have them bring you before a magistrate or a judge to determine if you're being properly held. This is a right in the Constitution. Abraham Lincoln suspended it. At the height of the Civil War, the Supreme Court of the United States said the president has no authority to do so, that the Constitution prohibits it. That means that even Congress couldn't have not have given him the authority to do that. Yet now we have a Congress that has supposedly given the authority to do that to the President of the United States that currently sits in the White House, Barack Hussein Obama. It is unconstitutional. Just like the NSA massive spying on everybody in this country is unconstitutional, the intimidation of the news media by the Department of Justice, by monitoring their telephone calls, finding out who they were calling, who they were talking to in the White House, who they were talking to the administration, to make sure there were no whistleblowers giving out information about what the Obama administration is doing. Intimidation, terror, it's all the same thing. It's all designed to force us to accept whatever this government wants to shove down our throat. This definition goes on to say that in 20th century Latin America, nationalist leaders often achieved power through the military and attempted either to maintain the privileged elite, or to institute far-reaching social reform depending on their class sympathies. Far-reaching social reform. Obama talks about that virtually every day. Definition goes on to say, in Europe's communist and fascist dictatorships, a charismatic leader of a mass party used an official ideology to maintain his regime and terror and propaganda to suppress opposition. I repeatedly pointed out in speeches and on this show and on other shows that I do how we are following the pattern of national socialism in Nazi Germany. Hitler was elected chancellor. Obama was elected president. The first thing Hitler did after he was elected in order to consolidate a dictatorship for himself, the first thing he did was to nationalize the healthcare system in Germany. The idea being that if you can control access to healthcare, you can control the population. The first thing Obama did when he was elected president was start to push to take federal control of the healthcare system. And he succeeded. The Congress didn't even read what was in the bill. The second thing Adolf Hitler did was to start disarming the German people, beginning with the veterans. Why? Well, those veterans of the German army took essentially the same type of oath that I took. I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Everybody in the federal government takes that oath. But in the military, we believe in it. It means something to us. The same type of oath was taken by the German soldiers. An oath to their country, to their constitution, not to anyone in particular in power. They, like us, were trained to use firearms, were trained in combat tactics, were trained to defend our country. This scared Hitler to death. He had to disarm the American people. He had to start out with the veterans. Obama is trying to disarm the American people, beginning with the veterans. The third thing that Hitler did was to start purging the military of high-ranking officers who did not personally owe their oath of office to him. Their personal allegiance was not necessarily to him, but to the country. He had to get rid of those people. We have a lot of high-ranking officers in this military that have been purged under the Obama administration. Sometimes it's been questionable charges about sexual harassment, about gambling, about that sort of thing. Other times it's been nothing at all, no reason at all, other than the fact that they might have disagreed with Obama about something. At that point, they have to be removed. It all falls in to this definition. In Europe's communist fascist dictatorships, the charismatic leader of a mass party used an official ideology to maintain his regime and terror and propaganda to suppress opposition. All of that is being done in this country today. And unfortunately, it's being done very effectively. And Obama's using executive orders, which, by the way, are not even really talked about in the Constitution. The courts have decided the President of the United States does have limited power under the Constitution to act when Congress is not in session. For example, if there's something involving national security or something involving one of our allies that needs assistance with something or something involving domestic crisis, the President can act in a limited fashion while the Congress is in recess. But then once Congress comes back into session, it has to approve whatever the President's done. Under Article 2 of the Constitution, the President is told essentially his powers consist of enforcing the laws passed by Congress. It doesn't say he can decide which laws to enforce, which Obama does all the time. It doesn't say he can decide to change the laws on his own or to make new laws. All those powers are given specifically to Congress in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Yet Obama is using his office to overreach that on a daily basis. Now let's take our final break.
The United States Justice Foundation, since 1979, has been dedicated to instructing, informing, and educating the public on legal issues confronting America. That means you and me. When necessary, this nonprofit organization has had to litigate to present the constitutional view. Since 1980, USJF has submitted testimony to the U.S. Senate on all but one U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Learn more about USJF by visiting their website at www.usjf.net. Support this nonprofit as it defends our rights, our liberty, and our Constitution.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Well, we're talking about executive orders and Obama's abuse of that power and how he really doesn't have that much power to issue executive orders. Sometimes he calls them executive orders. Sometimes he calls them executive actions. It doesn't matter. What he's doing is he's bypassing Congress. He's creating laws on his own or is ordering his federal agencies, his departments like the EPA, the FCC, to go ahead and make the laws that they want to make, to enforce regulations they want to enforce. For example, prior to the 2012 election, 4,000 pages of new regulations for the coal and oil and gas industry were written up by the Obama administration. Now, under the law, they're supposed to publish these proposed regulations and give the public a reasonable opportunity to comment on them and to give Congress a chance to look at them and, if necessary, to block their implementation. These 4,000 pages of regulations were hidden from the American public. They were never published. Congress knew nothing about them, because if they had been published, they could have affected the outcome of the 2012 election. They could have caused Obama to be defeated. Because these regulations, they're being put into effect right now, with more to follow, are going to cause the price of energy in this country to skyrocket. You think your utility bill is high now? Try having it three times as high. Try having a 300% increase in your utility bill. In other words, if you're paying $500 a month right now for your electric bill and your gas bill, try $1,500 a month. So these regulations were hidden from the American people. They started enforcing them right after the election. No public comment period, nothing. All done by so-called executive action. Now tomorrow, as I understand it, Obama is going to issue another executive order, this one involving the economy, and he's going to tell employers that they have to extend the use of overtime benefits to more employees, that they are going to have to give overtime, pay overtime to people who normally have been salaried employees, not hourly employees. This is going to cause a loss in jobs. It's going to cause more businesses, small business, to go out of business. It's going to cause more businesses to leave this country and go hire workers in foreign countries. Obama has no power to do that. Only Congress can do that. And frankly, I don't think they have the constitutional authority to do that either. But they passed the law back during the Roosevelt administration that said that they could regulate wages and hours. The Fair Labor Standards Act is called. I think it's unconstitutional. But be that as it may, only Congress can amend it to make the changes Obama's going to make tomorrow by executive order. He knows he can't get it through the House of Representatives, so he's going to do it by executive order, once again bypassing the Constitution. How many times has he done this? Well, I've lost count. I mean, remember right after the man took office, he, by executive order, nationalized much of the auto industry. He had the federal government step in and take over control of General Motors, control of Chrysler, and then he ordered General Motors to start putting out these electric cars, which were a total failure. Nobody wanted to buy them. And so we had to bail out, I say we, the taxpayers, had to bail out General Motors. The only car company that really was not affected, the U.S. car company, was Ford. They didn't accept any federal money. They didn't want to bail out. Ford went on their own and has been the most profitable of the automobile companies because they're on their own. But this is one of the things Obama did. And he did it with the healthcare industry. One-sixth of our economy is now going to be mostly under federal control. It was supposed to increase employment in the healthcare industry. Instead, thousands of employees are being laid off. Doctors are quitting or retiring early. Nurses are being laid off. Physicians' assistants are being laid off. Lab technicians are being laid off. It was supposed to, the Affordable Health Care Act, remember, it was supposed to decrease people's premiums and increase their benefits. The reverse has happened. They're going to be paying more for less, being paying more money for less insurance. So executive orders have been used on the economy, been used on the Second Amendment. Remember a couple of weeks ago, Obama issued an executive order on the Second Amendment saying that he's now going to take what's happening to veterans, where they're being mislabeled as mental defectives, in order to take away their gun rights. He wants that to apply to everyone in this country. He's amended on his own the HIPAA Act, which is, provides our right to privacy of our medical records and our medical history, and says he's amending that to allow the states, in fact, to encourage the states to send their medical records to the FBI, or medical records of people to the FBI, if that person's ever been depressed, if that person has ever taken certain types of drugs, if that person has ever had PTSD, and they will automatically then be put on the list of people that cannot legally purchase firearms. Now, the legal criteria is you must have been declared, adjudicated, to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to yourself or others. That criteria has been wiped out by Obama and by the VA. That's the law, but since when does this man obey the law or abide by the law? So that's the next step he's taken. And then you got executive orders on immigration. He basically has told our Border Patrol to stop enforcing immigration laws. He's told prosecutors to not deport illegals. He has basically told a number of people here who are here illegally that they don't have to leave, that they don't have to worry about being deported. All they need to worry about is signing up for Obamacare so they can get free health care, which, of course, Obama promised us and Nancy Pelosi promised us. And Harry Reid promised us that under the Affordable Care Act, illegals would not get free health care. Now they're being told to sign up for Obamacare and get free health care. And even though they're illegal, they will not be used against them. So we got the right to privacy. We got the First Amendment. We got the Second Amendment. We got all of the amendments, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, under attack by the Obama administration. All of which is being done to fit this classic pattern of a dictatorship. Earlier today, I was being interviewed on another show, and I was talking about there were questions being raised about my book, my novel, Amigalia, A Story of America, which, by the way, is still selling very well on Amazon and other places as an e-book, but also as a hard copy, and how I came up with the idea. Well, it's interesting because 25 years ago, I wrote this book. And I wrote it, and I based the premise on we had a weak president of the United States, a very liberal president of the United States, who wanted to placate our enemies, wanted to destroy the U.S. military, wanted to weaken it, and that this president got Congress to go along with him. And as a result, we were attacked by the Soviet Union using weapons placed in outer space. Now, I took that book and I shoved it in a drawer. I didn't think it was worthy of being published. Didn't really try to get it published. And then years later, things started looking like they were really happening according to what I had written. So I pulled that back out and I updated the book to make the Chinese our main adversary, which the Chinese are, although the Russians under Putin are reemerging as a major adversary to us. And I had this book, the book was published. Now, the book chronicles the Chinese using space-based weapons to wipe out our military, and then we surrender, the President of the United States surrenders the country, and we're occupied. And the American people start to resist. They use their Second Amendment rights, what's left of them, and they start to gather weapons, and they start to fight. And this is the story of that resistance. It's interesting the reactions I'm having on Amazon, for example. Some people get very upset because they think I'm the Michael Connelly of the Rights Mysteries. When they find out I'm not, they attack the book. Others praise the book highly and talk about how this is what's happening today. In fact, I had a phone call not too long ago where a woman called me because she was reading my book, and she said all of a sudden, she heard on the news that the Chinese had launched space platforms into space that were capable of carrying weapons. And she called me up to say, just say, how did you know? How can this be that you wrote this book years ago, and now what you predicted is happening? Well, I don't have the power to see into the future. But the fact of the matter is, I can see what's happening. So we need to be aware of what's going on. You can order that book, by the way, by going to www.michaelconnelly.com. That's J-I-G-S-Y. You can order it on Amazon. You can order it on Barnes & Noble. Virtually all the websites, if you're carrying it, or you can order it through your local bookstore. And you can also get copies of my book on our Constitution, and get copies of The Mortarman, the story of my dad's unit during World War II, which has become a bestseller now. And thank you again for listening to me, and I look forward to talking to you next week.